Chapter 1. Dream Analysis in its Practical Application. The use of dream analysis in psychotherapy is still a much debated question. Many practitioners find it indispensable in the treatment of neuroses and ascribe as much importance to the psychic activity manifested in dreams as to consciousness itself. Others, on the contrary, dispute the value of dream analysis and regard dreams as a negligible byproduct of the psyche. Obviously, if a person holds the view that the unconscious plays a leading role in the formation of neuroses, he will attribute practical significance to dreams as direct expressions of the unconscious. If, on the other hand, he denies the unconscious or thinks that it has no part in the development of neuroses, he will minimize the importance of dream analysis. It is regrettable that in this year of grace, 1931, more than half a century since Carus formulated the concept of the unconscious, over a century since Kant spoke of the immeasurable field of obscure ideas, and nearly 200 years since Leibniz postulated an unconscious psychic activity, not to mention the achievements of Janet, Flournoy, and Freud, that after all this, the actuality of the unconscious should still be a matter for controversy. Since it is my intention to deal exclusively with questions of practical treatment, I will not attempt in this place a defense of the hypothesis of the unconscious, though it is obvious enough that dream analysis stands or falls with this hypothesis. Without it, the dream appears to be merely a freak of nature, a meaningless conglomerate of memory fragments left over from the happenings of the day. Were the dream nothing more than this, there would be no excuse for the present discussion. We must recognize the unconscious if we are to treat of dream analysis at all, for we do not resort to it as a mere exercise of the wits, but as a method for uncovering hitherto unconscious psychic contents which are causally related to the neurosis and therefore of importance in its treatment. Anyone who deems this hypothesis unacceptable must simply rule out the question of the practicability of dream analysis. But since, according to our hypothesis, the unconscious plays a causal part in the neurosis, and since dreams are the direct expression of unconscious psychic activity, the attempt to analyze and interpret dreams is entirely justified from a scientific standpoint. Quite apart from therapeutic results, we may expect this line of endeavor to give us scientific insight into psychic causality. For the practitioner, however, scientific discoveries can at most be a gratifying byproduct of his efforts in the field of therapy. He will not feel called upon to apply dream analysis to his patients on the chance that it may throw light upon the problem of psychic causality. He may believe, of course, that the insight so gained is of therapeutic value, in which case he will regard dream analysis as one of his professional duties. It is well known that the Freudian school is of the opinion that important therapeutic effects are achieved by throwing light upon the unconscious causal factors, that is, by explaining them to the patient and thus making him conscious of the sources of his trouble. If we assume for the time being that this expectation is borne out by the facts, we can restrict ourselves to the questions whether or not dream analysis enables us to discover the unconscious causes of the neurosis, and whether it can do this unaided or must be used in conjunction with other methods. The Freudian answer, I may assume, is common knowledge. My own experience confirms this view, inasmuch as I have found that dreams, not infrequently, bring to light in an unmistakable way the unconscious contents that are causal factors in a neurosis. Most often, it is the initial dreams that do this. I mean, those dreams that a patient reports at the very outset of a treatment. An illustration will perhaps be helpful. I was consulted by a man who held a prominent position in the world. He was afflicted with a sense of anxiety and insecurity and complained of dizziness sometimes resulting in nausea, of a heavy head and difficulty in breathing, this being an exact description of the symptoms of mountain sickness. He had had an unusually successful career and had risen with the help of ambition, industry, and native talent from a humble origin as the son of a poor peasant. Step by step he had climbed, attaining at last an important post that offered him every opportunity for further social advancement. He had actually reached a place in life from which